Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's second Tuesday Vacation Station food, wine, and travel show with the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. They're an amazing organization made up of destinations and travel writers, photographers, tour guides, lodging destinations, wineries, that's a big deal. Farmers, yay, that's a big deal. Restaurant, all of it. So it's a really cool organization. And every second Tuesday, every second Friday, we get to chat with those that are all part of the tourism body, which is great. And today we're very excited to welcome back Sherry Wyatt. She is from the Whidbey and Camano Islands in Washington State. And you can go to WhidbeyCaminoIslands.com. And so I'm going to bring her back on. But last time she was on the show, I remember saying Camano. You say Camano, I say Camano. And I want to make sure I'm saying it correctly. So welcome back, Sherry. How are you?
I'm doing great. And it is, you said it right.
Do I get some wine from the island now?
Absolutely. I think we still owe you some.
I know. So this is so cool. You guys are out in Washington State. So just for folks that just go back to the beginning, I know you've been on the show before and brought people on before, but for those at the first time hearing about Whidbey Camano Islands, so you're kind of like, we're from Seattle. Let's do that. That's probably the easiest place, right?
Right, right. So from Seattle, if you flew into SEA Airport, it used to be called Seattle Tacoma International Airport, but we call it SEA now, SEA, it would be about a 30-mile drive.
Really? And that's it?
To the tip. The southern tip of Whidbey Island, it's about 50 miles to Camano Island, and you just cross a bridge to go on to Camano. At the southern tip of Whidbey Island, you would get in line for the ferry that runs every 30 minutes. And if you chose to forego that, you could go a little bit further of a drive and head on the Deception Pass Bridge, which is on the north end of the island. And that would bring you on. And you can also get to the island from another ferry from the Olympic Peninsula.
Oh, okay. So that's right. I remember that now. Yeah, the Olympic Peninsula. Okay, let's talk about ferries because, you know, Nancy and I travel full-time, document parks, public lands, and, you know, we've ended up going, oh, next thing you know, you're going on a ferry. Like, wait, what does that mean? You know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, do we want the car on the ferry? How long is that going to take? What's going to happen? And if you're not planning, like, trust me, like, we've been in Galveston, like, uh-oh, turn around, it's getting dark, what are we doing? You know, North Carolina recently, like, we need to plan ahead, I think, for
right,
these things.
No, I get and, it.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what the ferry entails for someone who all of a sudden may find themselves, like, you're about to drive into a no-turn-back zone.
Sure. So it's interesting. It's a brand new terminal. We haven't had a terminal, you know, like this in 50 years. So it's at Mukilteo, and the line is actually a little deceiving. We used to always know which ferry we'd be on based on where we were in the line, but now it's all different, you know, because they have a new parking lot and a new terminal. But it's really easy. You just drive up, you pay your toll, you know, probably be about $10 for you and your car. And that would be a one-way crossing. It's only about a 20 to 30 minute crossing, but the wait might take a while. It just depends, but you won't be parked way up the road like you used to be. You'll be in this nice parking lot right by where the ferries are. So
drive on the boat and then you
just drive on. Yeah.
For mainlanders, this is different, right?
So for sure. I mean, there's always that little nervousness the first time. And even I have a little thrill each time because it feels like I'm on a, you know, a carnival ride or something.
Because are you in the car when it moves?
You are.
I know this sounds so basic, but honestly,
stay in the car.
You right now through COVID, they've recommended that we all stay in our car, but you certainly have to. And in normal times, you would be able to, you know, walk up to the galley and get a sandwich and walk around out on the top deck. And there's artwork on the ferry and brochures, and you know, you can even get you can even get a glass of wine or a glass of beer.
Well, Nancy could. I'm not allowed because if I'm driving, she's not. Yeah, I'm not allowed.
That's true. You know, so in a designated area. Yeah.
Really?
So kind of festive. I mean, people love to get out and take pictures because they're excited. They're coming to an island. They're usually on vacation, and even people here that are, you know, oh, you know, fairy schmeary, I've done it 100 times. We still like to watch the sunset or look for a whale. And
yeah. Oh, okay. I want to do, because I always thought about going to the ferry to Alaska, and I always thought that would be the coolest thing. But then it's like, and we've driven on ferries like in Africa when things actually go crazy. And that was way back in the 70s and 80s. Like, that was like, you could lose your car. So that was a little different. This is different. So now we're like, wait, you know, we've talked about these ferries for all the time. Oh, just get on the ferry. But like recently we realized, whoa, wait. We need to know what's going on. So this is so very cool.
Very safe and very easy. And, you know, for 14 years I've lived here, and I've always kind of joked about maybe I should carry, you know, life preservers in the car or something, because what would happen? But they do safety drills all the time, and there's plenty of people to help and rescue. And sometimes the ferry itself is involved in rescuing a kayaker or something. So, you know, it's just all really big family, and
it's part of the island life. So that's kind of a neat introduction to go to the islands, right? So, but you can still drive there if you want. So you're kind of a connected island. So almost like a peninsula in a way, right? Where
pretty easy to get to that way. I mean, the bridge is definitely a bridge.
You are going over then. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you are. You've got bridges. Yeah, we've been in Florida, so we're kind of used to that now. But this is so cool, though. You go on island life, and one thing we wanted to touch on is, let's look at the size of the islands. And as travelers, you know, especially COVID, I think really when COVID impacts islands in a way of like, hey, there's only so many of us, we can all be safer, or it could go crazy, right? And so it kind of reminds us, you know, even through climate change, about sustainability and the health of an island, because like if you're on the mainland, like you got more space, you got, you know, you've got a little bit more wiggle room than an island. And so it makes me think, as a traveler, we need to be more aware of, don't trash the island. Don't, you know, the litter thing. We just did an interview yesterday about dry tortugas, about, you know, this, keep things pristine as travelers, just as much as I think as an island. Do you guys kind of have that over the interviews over the years? You have that. We need to take care of our islands.
You know, it's just a natural way of being, I think, on an island. I think it just makes you a better person in some ways, because you're in a community. And so you always bring your best self out, and there just isn't litter. People just don't. And the visitors are respectful as well. But we're finding that we had a lot of pressure where visitors came all at once very quickly, and are now more aware that we need to help visitors remember where they are, and that, you know, to have a certain amount of rules of engagement, shall we say, of how you might want to be and bring yourself to the island and engage with locals in a way that's respectful, and be concerned about stewardship for our beaches, and understand that this isn't a place that, you know, you just love and leave. It's a place that we all love to come back to year after year. Many people have family cabins and return to year after year. And for those of us who live here, of course, you know, we're here every day, and it's just kind of important, I think, that we all remember that, you know, sustainability means a lot of things to a lot of people. It's economic sustainability. And
well, if you don't take care of your environment, you don't have sustainable economics.
That's exactly right. You know, because the very thing people love about us might be the very thing we lose if we don't be more aware of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's true even across the entire world. You know, it's the thing like, okay, the word convenience, you know, to me has now become almost a dirty word in a way, where it means it's so convenient to not clean up after yourself, so convenient to drive, you know, here instead of over there, and to not be conscious of the impact we make.
Yeah, if you don't like convenience, you're going to like the islands.
Good. I mean, you don't have island, well, they say island time for a reason, right? So your ferry may take a little while because there's a kayaker or a whale, you know? And then I'm not happy about COVID, and because lives have been lost. It's really been devastating all around the world. However, it kind of brought us back to our roots of chill. chill out right. a little bit, you know?
Patience mm-hmm. and kindness and just those normal life skills and wash right. your hands and cover your mouth. I mean, normal.
And we need to be taught how to wash our hands. Like, I'm like, what are you talking about? But apparently,
well, because people don't.
Yeah.
Ew, sometimes.
The basics, you know, and I think COVID's brought our community certainly mm-hmm. closer together. And mm-hmm. we've worked through, you know, the challenges of even as a tourism bureau, do we invite people here? You know,
yeah, that all my mm-hmm. friends that are involved in, they're like, this is the worst like right. thing. Mm-hmm. What do we do?
And we all
that balance.
And as people were watching their summer bookings disappear last year and, mm-hmm. and being returned and they were feeling terrible at the same time, they go, you know, the right thing to do is to just slow it down and let's not encourage people to visit until the time is right. Mm. So our focus was more on economic recovery here with our with businesses. And we even got involved in like shop local campaigns. And
that's awesome.
Did a holiday.
I like that.
Well, yeah, the shop local is also really reminding people as a visitor to go, you want those local mom and pop shops. We've been doing shows like that too. We're really trying to promote the small business because we all relied on the big giants to deliver everything to our door, and the people involved with the giants kind of had to be involved with the giants, and they ain't getting paid like they should. You know what I mean? So I'm just
it's saying, a balance, you know.
It's yeah, all it's all a balance. But so, where are you now? As in the two islands, where are you now in regards to people coming over? Are you comfortable with it?
Well, it's been a bit of an explosion, actually. We have so many people who have pent up, you know, desire to leave their little condos or apartments or homes and just get out into what you're looking at behind you, right? That fresh air and that beauty of a
Oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
Forest. And so we had a lot of people come, and we have so short-term rentals that are available, vacation rentals that you could bring your whole family and be safe together and even work from there remotely and bring the dog and, you know, have your kids even be going to school. So we found people did come here and stay for quite some time. And with our worker shortage, and there's been a labor shortage throughout the world, we started feeling it this summer, the last couple of months. So, you know, people are still welcome, but you can just feel that there's been a bit of a strain on some of our resources and our favorite trails. And you know, some of our favorite destinations, we kind of are encouraging people to visit different ones and, you know, steer them away from the well-known paths to maybe the road less traveled. And so
that's a part of real travel, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is really something that I'm personally now going through a program put on by the Transformational Travel Council. And it's transformational travel is the new buzzword.
Yeah.
And it's experiential travel used to be kind of what we talk about, where you'd go somewhere.
And authentic.
And right. And you'd make a scarf. So I wore this scarf deliberately because I made this here on the island at an art studio.
Oh, cool.
To awesome. Put the ink into this big tray, and then they put the silk scarf down and you pull it up, and it's whatever you've designed. It's
awesome.
That's like kind of an interactive experiential, but transformational travel I'm learning is quite a bit different in that it's really where not only you're changing, but you're helping the destination. You're thinking about them and not just about yourself and your own experience. And you leave it better and you leave yourself better. And so I'm going through this program, and then we're going to take our whole destination through it next year.
Oh, how wonderful.
Nice.
So we're going to be undergoing a lot of reimagining what travel will be like here. And how we want it to be for people so they have a good experience, but also so visitors, you know, have a good experience too.
Well, it takes a local thing, like, you know, it's more than hanging out with the locals in the local bar, right? It takes a little bit to, you know, and like with us, we travel, I was saying before we push the record button that we pets it now a little bit because COVID, it was a way of us quarantining and also helping people travel if they were going to see family. And it turned out to be a very cool thing. Number one, we love animals, but you are really ingrained in a local area. We still do bed and breakfast and hotels. We still travel normal and do all that. But there's this other side where you go, oh, where is the local vet? where's the hospital? Where are these things that you know, it goes
you might
beyond
need.
The Gideon's Bible in your hotel room. Let's put it this way.
You no, I mean, I hear you. You become part of the community, right?
Because you have, so it's a little bit more than having a vacation rental. So a lot of times people talk about a vacation rental. Oh, you're living like the local, going to the grocery store because you can cook. Well, this, because you have responsibility, your whole attitude changes and you are ingrained. Okay. You need to know what to do, if this, what, where, who is a gas company? Oh, you start watching the local news. Oh, they're really going to, there's going to be a hurricane. Listen, the local news, everyone's got to do it. It's the best thing. Yeah. Listen to the local radio, local TV, read the local newspaper. But you become, so whatever we can do in tourism of travel and being able to, I'm not saying everyone should pet it because you've got to love animals to do it. And, you know, you're working a little bit while you're doing it. But it's about having some kind of responsibility. It's like the experience, like you're saying, where two parts are meeting. Transformational should be, it transforms also those you're connecting on the other side.
Right. Travel has the ability to do a lot of good. I mean, there's
And
at the same time, you know, it has the ability to do not so good. I mean, it can really culture of a place and separate people from, you know, the only the locals, your only interaction you have is maybe they're serving you something or selling you something. And that's not what we want to be about. And it's short-term rentals. I mean, I think we're going to be doing a lot of outreach with those owners to in their pre-boarding, you know, when they're before they bring people here. So the people that come won't just stay in their vacation rental, but will actually, you know, because they kind of isolate there you know, might actually integrate into the small towns and listen to music and you know, be interested in the culture.
The culture is important in getting it. Like, I think for an island, especially with what you have, the restaurants, the farms that are organic. I mean, everything is, we've talked about the chocolates, the meaderies. I mean, you got zip lining, you got all these things happening, but it's small and local and it can't be overrun. So, you know, mainland needs to learn from what the islands are doing, and we have to kind of work together too, because even climate change, islands are susceptible, like
very vulnerable.
That's a better word. Yeah, that's
I think we are, you know, maybe we're just more aware of things.
Yes,
you know, things we do for ourselves. We're not creating them for tourism. You're welcome to share and visit and enjoy them and encourage to, but they aren't created just so a visitor will come and do that. You know, it's interesting, different way of, you know, like where you'd go ride horses is where they actually board horses and they train horses. And it's not just created for horseback riding for visitors, right? So it's like a working ranch, a thoroughbred ranch for you. So I just love the fact that, you know, people are really, there's that authentic word again, but.
But authentic is the whole thing. You can't be transformational unless you're real.
But I think it's immersive. It's more of an immersive kind of experience where if you put yourself, like, you're right, if somebody flies there and just goes in their hotel room and stays and doesn't go out and talk to the local people, they don't go shopping. And they're just like in a hotel room. Well, if you go anywhere and not know anything about anything, that's to me not travel. Travel is you go into a place and you try to integrate into the society and the landscape and see what the attractions are, see how the people are living and talk to the locals and have a really good time. So now you're being educated.
Or maybe even not a good time. That's what's interesting is that.
Yes. Some of the worst things that have happened to us on the road are now our best stories.
Right. Because transformation takes place at that point of uncomfortableness.
Yes. And then we'll go back where you think you wouldn't. You do. You end up going back. It ends up being the, you know how the criminal returns to the crime spot? It's exactly that.
why are we doing this to ourselves again?
I know. Well, we're going back because it was cool. It made it pushed us beyond our boundaries. And travel is always cushy. Yeah. You aren't experiencing anything new and you're not pushing yourself. And transformation is such a beautiful word. You know, you got to think about butterflies, right? And how they transform and have those cycles. And you don't think, oh, here's the caterpillar. And I think caterpillars look really cool. But then they go in that little crusty old little thing and you're like, I don't know, that's kind of weird alien looking. And then all of a sudden, here I am. I'm beautiful and you only see me for a couple of days and bye-bye, you know, but it's,
you know, I'm by no means an expert yet, but I think if we talk a year from now, I'm going to have a lot more to say and have a lot more of to contribute to this conversation in terms of what transformational travel is going to look like here.
Yeah. I'm excited about this because you guys being on an island, I think it's something we can all look at. All destinations, and it's two-sided and united as well. So the traveler and the destination, and like Nancy always says, you cannot have responsible tourism if the community is not part of the tourism discussion.
Right, exactly. And, and there's been a little, you know, rumblings about maybe there's too many people here. You know, there's, what are we doing with the ferry lines gotten wrong? And so, you know, it's a really important time for us to go back and let's revisit all of this because we
and not be too emotional about it when it's so so like if you ask us about a place we're having a bad time with, like, right, or a negative experience on a destination, we'll be like, that sucks, like, but then, like, you know, ask me 2 months down the road, oh, I'm so going back, you know. So the same thing also for the locals going, oh, that really sucks, but then wait a minute, I could pay my air conditioning bill or whatever. It was a little bit.
Where did all the visitors go? I mean,
so they yeah, when the height of emotion, like, things have to calm down for reasoning.
But there's expectations and then there's fresh eyes. So visitors coming in that haven't been there before come in with two things, fresh eyes and expectations. Now the expectations are part of what they hope to see, part of what literature and websites tell them. So there's expectations, and that may or may not be exactly how they vision it in their mind, because they didn't write it, they haven't seen it, somebody else wrote it, and that's their words and their vision of it. So when you're reading a brochure or looking at a website, your vision is not probably exactly the same as the person who wrote it.
Oh, for sure. And we're actually going to be rewriting everything, I think, through this.
I think a lot of people are going to rewrite a lot of things.
Because we want to deliver on the promise, and the promise might not just be walk on a pretty beach and, you know, eat.
I feel like it's a more down-to-earth, real experience as opposed to la-la-la, airy-fairy in the cloud experience. And so between airy-fairy in the clouds and down-to-earth, there's a whole lot of
balance,
space here for the right words, but you're never going to make everybody happy and you're never going to make everybody mad.
Well, at least that's good.
No,
if you're looking for nightlife, though, you might be disappointed here.
But that's a good thing to say. It's like,
our nightlife is a calm walk on the beach, not a disco.
It's the night sky.
That's magic. Yeah, you know, and that's it is about balance. And like to me, like when you think of transformational travel, when I think about your area, I love to kayak. I am not good at kayaking. Heck no, I twirl around in circles. I need a guide. I just go in circles. No, but I love it. I know. But I wanted, we've talked about it on shows about, you know, the first place I learned to kayak was in a swamp in Louisiana with alligators. So
That like, was cool.
Not
it
bad.
Was way cool.
Not bad.
Pretty courageous. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was but
way cool.
But it was actually a bio, not a swamp. But yeah. There's
really.
Sorry, there's things in there, and frogs were jumping on me, and all kinds. It was cool. But it was cool. Really cool. But what scares me is going out in the water and being like, I want to be near a whale, but that scares the bejesus out of me, or whatever. Don't get mad at me how I say things, but that scares me. And yet, at the same time, I will sign up to do it. And that, to me, whether you see a whale or you don't, or even if I die doing it, that's my choice of go for it. That will be transformational. Just fact of going and overcoming a fear is transformational. Mm-hmm. And I think an island has that whole, like, it's for folks who are on the mainland or a different kind of terrain, this is an island. And if the island is acting like the mainland, you ain't got anything new for us. You know what I mean? And the people can't, you know.
What's the point?
What's the point? And Hawaii got kind of crazy from what I hear. I've never been there, but from what I've heard from environmentalists and all the people we've interviewed for years about Hawaii, it's beautiful. It's magical. Yes, it's a great destination. It's very hard to get to a beach because of all the resorts and things like that. So when you look at coastline and islands, it's important for the community to be able to have a place to go. And we've been on the beaches recently in different states going some places you can go, and some you could be driving around an entire lake and not be able to park and go to the lake as a regular citizen of the country.
Yeah.
So
because privately owned.
And so that can be what an island decides they want to do. And you just say, that's it. You know what I mean? So there's a balance.
And we're funny you bring this up. The Sound Water Stewards recently republished a book called Getting to the Water's Edge. And it's all the public places on both Whidbey and Kamehameha Islands. And how to behave. I mean, really, what to do if you see kelp or a seal pup or, you know, just what you're looking at. It explains it. And so we're partnering with them and we're doing a trails guide that'll be out next year. And it's just going to be trails that are the kind of the lesser known ones. You know, we're not going to be on the one behind you, the one behind me, you know, the Deception Pass or EB's Landing. We'll be looking at other ones, and we're working in partnership with them to develop that guide. And that's a new direction for us, right? That's instead of just pointing people to the most popular or the iconic, you know, we're looking a little differently.
Yeah. There's something we learned. Cool. It was when we were in Silver City, New Mexico, on the Gila Wilderness. And Nancy, you were reading about the Apache at that point, because the Apaches Indians had that terrain years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And you were reading about, you know, we all think, here's the trail, don't divert from the trail, don't touch the other side, right? The Apaches were spread out, don't create the rut.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Don't make a trail because we don't want to be found just yet.
But you're not hurting. Well, I mean, you've got to think there weren't like hundreds of thousands of people, right? So, but they were about spreading out, being light-footed, so it didn't do much damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you just kept running the one place over and over and over again that you spread out.
That's a footprint. Right?
Yeah. Yes. So I was kind of thinking about the different trails you're talking about, and that allows also for wilderness areas that can be untouched for the nature to be able to have their own haven.
Right. You know? It's important to protect that. But also it's important to have accessibility for everyone of all abilities.
And, yes. Yes.
And people that don't maybe have the ability to pay for a parking pass at a state park, but want to still experience nature. So you know, we're using a lot of care and it's very intentional.
Wow.
And how we're doing this. Yeah, we're really thinking through this.
I want to hear as you keep going, keep us posted on this because
For sure.
It's really exciting, especially on the nature side, because you have to coexist with nature, right? With what you do on the island.
Oh, yeah. Right. Otherwise, you know, what are you going to have? Right? What are you going to have if everything's overdeveloped on your island and it's crowded? Why would anybody go?
What is a balance of that? I mean, are there people with marinas that kind of travel in and out, like almost like a houseboat, you know what I mean? And so what is that balance of both islands in regards to open space?
Well, there's a lot of land that's been put into conservation easement and that is protected, and there won't be development in those areas. But there are also some conversations taking place about more affordable housing, more availability for people to be able to live here that can't necessarily, you know, own a $1 million home, right? That they want to work here and raise their families here.
Right.
So there is a balance, and those conversations about what is smart development and is there existing things that maybe could be, you know, repurposed and made into now homes and a place to live or apartments or something. So, I mean, this is all part of that conversation.
Wow. So you're at the very beginning part.
It's important to take care of people that, you know, want to live here
and work. I mean, there's so many destinations that Airbnbs, everybody's bought second and third homes that are just Airbnb'd out that the people can't even get to work because they can't,
Right.
Do you have that problem there too? Or?
Well, sure. I mean, I think it's
everyone.
But you know, it's simplifying it really to say that that's the problem. It's part of what's happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, this hope of wanting to be able to make a living by buying a home that you rent out. I mean, I understand that it's more cost effective to rent it for only a few nights a month rather than the whole month.
A home like but I'm talking about the second and third homes that people are buying and just primarily for that. Eventually, it prices people that can actually work to do the tourism, which means they're kind of pushing themselves out in a weird way.
It's a balance that has to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. We're at the very beginnings of those conversations, and I'm glad that we're starting them now because they're, you know, they're not comfortable necessarily.
No. I can imagine.
They're necessary. Mm. So, remember we said that transformation is at the point of uncomfortableness.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, here we are.
You got to have that movement.
But see, the bright side is that you're actually looking for a conversation that leads to solutions as opposed to ignoring it.
Mm. Or being defensive or antagonistic.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. You got to bring everybody's input in. I mean, it's like when a national park is created, everybody comes in. I don't want a national park next year. Well, actually, then I do because it's protected. Like, you know, so everybody has their thing. You got to get it out. And then everybody looks at, you know, balance it out and make the decisions. This is, you know, it's interesting because you think about the island and you think about Washington State, nature, obviously whales. Do you get otters? Mm. You get otters, don't you?
Oh, we have otters, But I wouldn't go fool around with them.
You know. Yeah, I know.
Oh, but I want to watch them.
I know. We want to
watch them, but don't fool around with them.
What is it like?
They chased me down on the beach once.
I know this is airing in early October.
That's funny.
You're airing in early October, so we're getting into fall and then into winter.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, they're just harvesting right now and harvesting everything and, you know, pressing the wine. And it's just, there's a lot happening right now. It's a great time to be here. It's beautiful.
In fall.
The changing of the leaves. Surprisingly, we have a lot of this trees. You might just think of a conifers, right? But we have both, and so there's a lot of color. It's really pretty.
What's winter like?
The otter chase you down the. I want to know why the otter chased you down the beach.
Well, I was with my dogs, and we were on one part of the beach. I like to really go.
I like your dogs, by the way. Everyone, their dog picture. That's cool.
Yeah. So two wire fox terriers, curious wire fox. We're romping down the beach like we always do. And we saw something and thought, oh, what is that? And kind of looked and then thought, turn right around before the dogs really noticed. So we did. And I was with my son and we hurried. And the otters went into the water and hurried beside us. You know, like we're trying to get ahead of us. And we were like, whoa.
Oh, wow.
It was a little scary.
Wow.
An otter to a dog. So we made it away. But I just remember now I have a healthy respect for otters. They're actually
cool.
They're cool. I mean, they are cool. But
they got teeth.
You got to give them their distance. They're charged.
Do you think they would have come out of the water at you?
They were out of the water at first.
Yeah.
When we were heading down the beach. Yeah. So I'm sure they would have come out. We, you know, I just, you know, used my high, happy voice and started running and the dogs follow. And you just,
that That's so
maybe
funny.
They won't notice. Exactly. Hi, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you get dolphins?
Yeah, we have a porpoise. All the time. Yeah, they're beautiful.
Yeah, because it's going to be different about, like, you know, we were just in Florida looking at dolphins. I'm like, I don't know, is that a porpoise or is that a dolphin?
They're smaller. They're smaller little porpoises. And we have, you know, of course, seals and sea lions and even humpback whales, as well as orcas and gray. The gray whales migrate right through our islands.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And then the bird life, you know, is fall.
It's a big migratory time right now. In fact, there's special kayaking tours just for the migratory birds. I wish you could do that.
Oh, what's spring like? Because we'll be there up in that area. Supposedly, that's what's going to happen in spring.
You know, I love spring. I love spring because you're really ready for it. And if you're here in time for the tulips up in Skagit County, it's pretty phenomenal. It's, you know, most of it's grown in the world are grown right there.
What time frame? What's the...
It'd be late April. So,
You never know. You never know.
Muscle festival.
What is winter like? Is winter like snowy? Do you get snow?
We might get a little bit of snow, but it's usually just enough like for a white Christmas. I mean, it really doesn't.
Magic.
I know. It's just kind of perfect where you just have that romantic sense when you're out for snow, but then it doesn't stay very long.
Perfect weather for mead. And chocolate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the hot spice wine, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we are in a rain shadow, so we do get less precipitation than Seattle, for example, but it's a maritime climate. So, you know, I think average temperature is 45 degrees year round, but it isn't 45 degrees year round, but the hottest we got was about 90, and that was really hot for us.
I know you guys got hot this year.
Just a couple days.
Wow.
The time it's
a little hot flash here and there is not bad.
Well, it certainly, you know, drew a few more crowds. I think people felt they'd get away from the smoke, get away from the fires.
Yeah, it's been the last 2 years have just been rough.
Yeah.
People do want out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
we understand.
It's been a rough couple of years, and people need to be outside and get some fresh air, literally. And they do need to go to
mental health too.
We all want to. Yeah, we need that balance. We need nature. We need fresh air, you know. So it's kind of,
but we can do it responsibly.
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely. Right. I love that you guys are taking the initiative of this, and please, I'll keep us posted. We want to hear as things happen, you know. I just think it's something that can happen across the country. And like I said, I think islands, we've done shows on climate change for islands with Carlisle Richardson. He was the UN ambassador to the islands for climate change, and he's retired from that from now. But
that's years ago.
It is very, very important.
Happen.
It's very important, you know.
So funny thing is, and it was journalists like you. We had a television, kind of like a vloggers, you know, video vlogger type show that were here who told me about the Transformational Travel Council. They're called Joy of the Journey. And they were here and told me that did you know there's people in Seattle that are spearheading this program? And
wow, it's around the corner. Yeah.
I was like, well, that's around the corner. So it was interesting.
Just a ferry right away.
But it's all been done this way. So virtually, it's been wonderful. I'm meeting people from South Africa.
That's our own land. That's where we had our Nancy had her magazine. That's where we started, is South Africa. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of inspiration I'm getting from all over the world, and it's nice to have that expertise right here and our community, so that we can have access to people that are been at this a lot longer than we have.
I think COVID brought us closer as a global community, and luckily we have things like Zoom and the internet to have all of that ability to make it happen. I mean, that's the first thing. As soon as we were in lockdown, we're in the desert. We literally drove into Joshua Tree Park as they were turning us away, and we were filming tent caterpillars. I know it's weird, but they were coming out. They were eating themselves out of. Well, here's the transformation. They were becoming moths, and they were eating out of their big web things. And we always thought they were spider webs, and lo and behold, they're tent moths, tent caterpillar thingies. And we thought this was like the coolest thing.
That's nature.
Cool.
Yeah.
It is so cool. I was putting up videos on Facebook and everyone was like, ew. And some people were like, dude, that's so cool, you know? And so we went to go, we wanted to go back and film like the moth part of it. And they were turning people away. But as soon as that happened, we started just doing shows every day. We're sitting there working away.
Stay productive. Yeah.
Didn't know we were just expanding our magazines into nine. But, you know.
Well, we need you to keep us, you know, sane. Appreciate what, the contribution you're making is important.
Oh, thank you. You guys too. That. It's a community. I think everybody, you know, we talk about tourism and travel and even this conversation, we're supposed to be sitting there going, you have this event, that event, this
that's
what's
true.
Happening. Right?
Forgot to promote ourselves.
but if we don't have that communication that bridges tourism and travelers into one conversation, like even in our magazines, we'll have our parks and travel and at the back, it's like, here's the tourism stuff. Because it's important that both sides connect. Let's think of this, stop the tourism talk in front of the traveler and the traveler not knowing this. No.
You know, and it's funny because we've talked a lot today about the locals and, you know, helping preserve this place. But what I'm learning through this course is the why people travel and that spiritual and emotional and physical things that are they're taking place in that journey. And I'm really feeling more respect and love, you know, for the visitor, you know, in a new way. Like I really I want you to have what you need from this, this voyage and this journey. Because a strange thing was said the other day is that wherever you are is where you live.
Well, definitely for us.
You kind of get that.
There's a responsibility in travel, and it isn't all on the destination. The traveler has to take some responsibility, not only for their attitude, but their actions. So you, like I said before, you can't make everybody happy. So a true traveler understands the bumps in the road and they draw from it and they remember it and it becomes a story later.
There may be some interesting language in the between times and some.
Well, yeah, but that's just being human. That's just being human. But the it's not all on the destination to make the traveler happy, because there are some people, no matter what you do, you can never make them happy. Right.
So maybe that's a difference between a tourist and a traveler. Is that?
Yeah.
Maybe what we're talking about here is.
But I think if people became travelers instead of tourists, that everybody's lives would be better.
Exactly. So I think that
maybe that's what the transformation is.
Maybe we do away with that word.
Well, it's kind of like when we started our
tourism.
A tourist, in a way, if you look at it like a tourist, in a way, flying here, do this, and that.
And staying on a bus with a camera, looking up the window.
Yeah, exactly. They're not.
Well, Nancy was a tour guide for a few years, taking people to Kenya.
That was a trip.
And people, she wanted, like, you'll see something magnificent. You saw amazing things. And they're like, aren't we supposed to have martinis at noon? You know, it's like, here's an elephant and a baby.
Yeah,
and go back to the hotel for martinis at noon. And when are you ever going to see the elephant and the baby again? You know,
right. But so, you know, for them, there was some reason, you know, and it's like
you got to hear that too.
The selfie thing too. This I got to have the perfect selfie, but you'll miss the whole place. You know, all you hear is clicking of cameras and.
Well, I would like people to slow down on all of that. I mean, I understand. Yeah. And the Instagram thing and when we're traveling, I try to do it. It's become, people are dying over it. They're getting killed because they're doing things that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And it's also destructive to the land or to people's property. So it's kind of gone into this crazy, I'm going to put it this way, that there's a tourist, a traveler. When we started the tour, our tour, the Love Your Parks tour, was Spirit of America tour, national parks, and quickly realized we have to cover every single kind of park. It was in 2012. It was, you know, all the national parks because we were getting close to the centennial of the park system. And everyone's like, oh, you've got to have a map. You got to, you know, at that point, we're on the road 100%. But I think 6 months later we were a year. No, it was 2013 we were. But so we have a passport book where you stamp the thing. Every time you've been in a park, you stamp it. Mm. And it's really cool. It's a collector's thing. People do it. Mm. It's awesome. I haven't done it. I have it in a one backpack, you know.
Well, because,
and we live in, like, we don't live in a car, but like everything we have on the road for is in the car. And it got to a point of like we document parks and then we put them in stories and maps and all of that. So that to me is the informational and real thing. But this whole gathering of collections, and I get it, and that'll never stop for people, but it's, and I don't want them to. I want them to enjoy however they do, but it became this, you just kind of wear it. You live in it. You do it instead of the, you know what I'm saying? You don't have.
I know the word too. It became so convenient. Remember we're talking about convenience?
Mm-hmm.
Just take 40 pictures and not think, okay, I only have 12 left on this roll and I've got to get it developed. And am I going to be able to buy more film? Now, I can just click all day long, and so convenient that maybe that's, you know, part of what's, we need to kind of edit ourselves a little bit and kind of, maybe that's the transformation for some people is to hear and just maybe only take a couple of pictures and just
actually
be in the moment.
The other day we were watching hummingbirds and we're like, oh, I should get the camera. And I'm like, I just want to watch the hummingbirds.
Let's just watch it this time. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that should happen.
You know, otherwise, you're not getting the photo.
It's all great to take photos. Mm. I'm not a fan of the put yourself in front of the scenery that you came to look at.
You're in front of scenery right now, but you didn't photograph.
I know, but I'm not a selfie kind of person in any way, shape, or form. That doesn't mean people shouldn't take selfies, but if that's all you're taking, you missed your trip, even while you were on it.
Mm.
You missed
that. That's that balance. I've heard from travel writers like, well, if you don't take your photo, it doesn't prove that you were there.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
maybe you don't have to post it till you get home. That whole posting it thing, you might have some trouble with cell service here, so you might be disappointed.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's coming from a visitor bureau. That's very interesting that you're like taking this. Because normally it's like you're up as a travel person, you're there. The first thing you do on a visit is you're in the bar with the band and everybody, and you get back to your room by 10, 11. Normally I'm up at 4 with the bed and breakfast person ready to film them doing a recipe. But wait, I need to now go and curate a whole bunch of posts for all the social media outlets, you know, and do that. And then it's like, okay, the next morning you're like, what? A zombie. Let's go out and do it again. But, you know, but all your stuff comes later. So I think it's we as travel writers also have to, the whole thing has to kind of like, let's simmer down a little. And let's
I think you're right.
Do that. Just simmer down.
Simmer down. I had a interesting exchange early on when I first started in this position with a writer who refused to post while traveling. And I thought, I was disappointed, right?
Yeah.
And like, point, right? Is, you know, and I realized it was a safety issue and didn't want anyone to know she wasn't home.
Yeah, we did. We are like that.
And I totally respect that now. And in fact, you know,
we only do the lodgings when we leave.
Father.
We only do the lodgings when we leave. We go, oh, what a wonderful stay. Here's the photos. Here's that. And then when we do an interview, then it's all there. So
if you have to have safety that balance. Reasons,
There really are legit like safety reasons of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And also, why do 20,000 things when you could pace it out and everybody gets to see it all the time? That's kind of a balance. I think the word of the day is balance.
I think the word of the day is balance.
I love that. And I love what you guys are doing. This is awesome. Hopefully we'll get to see you next year when we go up to Washington. We'll be in Washington State.
Can't wait.
February through March. And then we'll be back in the summer.
Fun.
So like, somewhere around something, we're going to be there. We'll see you.
Nice to give you a great big hug in person.
Yeah. And look at a whale or an otter. Awesome. Let's go up to an otter and go coochie, coochie, coo. No, that
is what you do. See, now February is a big migration of the gray whales. You'll see them. So March, we have the Mussel Festival. There'll be in April, it'll be tulips. So anytime you come, There'll be some.
Wow. Do you have a high season of when people come the most? Is it mostly summer?
It's really turning into, you know, May to October. It was originally, you'd say, you know, June, July, August or something, but it seems like it's extended a little bit more.
But that's good.
That's good. And the winter is nice too. It's just be prepared for some of those storms that create the trees.
The cool thing. Like when we lived in Tucson, people go, don't go to the desert in summer, but you have these monsoon storms and there's these wildflowers and all these other kind of birds and like all
sorts
of
things happen.
Go off season.
Right. And all these miracles, right? Miracles of nature.
Yeah. And then you get to really know what the locals go through.
Right.
Just saying. Well, thank you so much for a very candid conversation about this.
That was awesome.
You know, so everyone go to WhidbeyCaminoIslands.com and also IFWTWA.org. So, you know, IFTWA, the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association, they are having their conference in November in St. Petersburg, Florida. And one of the first times we met you was when you had the conference there with all the travel writers. So you guys are still represented over there. I think you guys are one of the sponsors. I saw something.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
We love it. We love IFTWA. They're great. Yeah,
they are.
And they have such high standards for their writers. And when they, you know, there's a code of conduct and it's a really respectful group. We think a lot of them.
Yeah, well, you've been members for a long time. You've been members for a while, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very cool, very cool. And so everyone, IFWTWA.org, if you're a destination, a travel writer, photographer, author, tour guide, kayaker, call me. I need your help. But I will get out there in the ocean and do whatever I'm scared of, I will do. And even if I die doing it, then I go like, that's it. That's how I went.
It's the ultimate transformation.
I'll let you know. I'll haunt you all on the other side. All right. So thank you, everybody. Don't forget, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Sure.